You are always good enough. You're not perfect. You are always good enough. And that's, I'm still learning to actually let that one sink in, but it's a big one.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we improve production by challenging the status quo. Your host, Armin Astani from Chirto Modo.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check.
Reliability Rebels.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we explore how to make software and systems more reliable by challenging the status quo. I'm your host, Amin Astani. Today, we're going to explore a difficult yet worthwhile topic, mental health in our industry. Anxiety, burnout, these aren't just personal struggles. They also shape how we lead, how we make decisions, and how we treat the people around us. And yet, we keep them mostly unspoken, not because they aren't real, but because silence feels safer, especially when our career is involved. But here's the thing. Silence isn't neutral. It makes things worse. And leaders who do the hard work of understanding themselves and then name and work through what they're carrying inside, they don't just feel better. They prevent the already stressful job from becoming even more stressful for themselves and their team. Challenging the status quo isn't just about talking about mental health, but refusing to normalize the silence that benefits the organizations and cultures that would rather do nothing. My guest today should be familiar to many of you, Stephen Townsend, host of Slight Reliability, who had me on his show in the previous crossover episode. Stephen is a team lead for SRE and DevOps at Blue Current, with deep roots in SRE and performance engineering. He's also someone willing to talk honestly about his own experiences and struggles, and let that encourage you to be more honest about the stuff you're carrying. We're not mental health professionals, but perhaps today's episode can provide some ideas to point you in the right direction. Stephen, good to see you again. The tables have finally turned.
Good morning. Oh, I don't know. It's morning for me, I mean, but it's so good to be here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I'm doing something a little bit different. I'm not often the guest on other people's podcasts. So this is it's a bit of a novelty, I guess.
Yeah. Fantastic. I appreciate the trust to do this and, yep. And enjoy the ride. Enjoy the coffee. It's going to be a good one. All right. So for those that don't know about you and Slight Reliability for some reason, let's fix that right now up front. Please give us an introduction and a plug to your podcast so people know about you.
Sure. Okay. So about 4.5 years ago, when I first moved into the world of SRE from performance engineering, I had already been podcasting about performance engineering, which is something I knew a lot about. I was an expert at it. SRE had no idea. So I started this podcast, which is, hey, I'm going to podcast about SRE. I know nothing. Come and learn with me. That was the intention from the start. I talked a lot about the work and the questions I had, and then more guests came on. It's been going for 4.5 years, I think, and the podcast has definitely evolved. It's a lot more about broader topics as well now. So I talk about technology leadership a lot since I got into leading people, also mental health, but also continuing to do different topics around observability and SRE and other adjacent topics. So yeah, that's the podcast. 123 episodes so far, so it's been going for a while.
Yeah, that's awesome. Again, thank you for joining me here. I have to say Slight Reliability is definitely an inspiration for what I'm doing. So once again, thank you. I said that in the last episode too.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get right into the meat of the topic here. So when we were preparing this episode, we met before, you shared that you personally had struggles with your mental health, like many of us have, and you struggled particularly with anxiety, and that's gone back a long time. So mind sharing a little bit with us about that experience?
Yeah. So I hadn't really joined the dots because I had burnout pretty bad about how long ago, 6 years ago now. Yeah. And I hadn't really connected the dots that this was a thing that had been going on throughout my whole life. And I, in retrospect, like going back and thinking over my life, there's a couple of things that came to mind. Yeah. One was when I was a teenager, I remember It's so crazy to think back about. I was sort of 16, 17 years old for 2 years. I got into this weird place where I was 100% convinced that I had a brain tumor. And it's just like this thing. It was in my mind. I don't know why it came to me. Mm-hmm. And I just became obsessed with it. But I was too afraid to talk about it with anyone. And it just became this internal thing I just dealt with every day. Yeah. And I didn't. It's like I just couldn't even imagine talking to someone about it. And yet it like crippled me to the point where eventually after 2 years of just putting myself through pointless agony, I spoke to my mother, who was a psychologist, and said, hey, this is this thing I'm going through. And she talked to me for 15 minutes, asked me some questions about the thing, like what are you really afraid of? And then we dug into that. And it was ultimately, I was afraid of that loss of control, that loss of control over my own mind, of my own body, of my own life. And after that conversation, that particular event faded away very, very quickly.
Wow.
But then sort of continued. I didn't really have any major events until later on in my life when my career got intense and I didn't have the tools to sort of manage what was coming at me and how to navigate that. Yeah, so that's it goes back even earlier. I remember being a very small child and lying awake at night, just unable to sleep, panicking about things and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you being honest and sharing. Like there's a lot about what you're saying that is relatable, especially like mentioning burnout and, you know, handling work conditions, but we all have our own personal stories. It's really, really cool that your mom is a psychologist and had the tools, you know, already ready to go to help guide you through, you know, challenging this thing that was consuming your mind and emotions.
Yeah.
So like, let's rewind a little bit. You put the fear to words with someone that you trusted and you said it out loud. And the act of doing that, do you feel that the act of doing that was a big piece of the puzzle or was there more?
I think there was definitely a big part of the puzzle. I think if there's a thing that you are terrified of, part of it is that you don't want to name it. You don't want to acknowledge that it's real.
Yeah.
And part of saying it aloud and acknowledging it with another person in witness is, I think, very therapeutic. It allows you to finally acknowledge the thing. It reminds me of this weird time. I remember I had a really bad headache and one of my friend's mums asked me questions about my headache. She said, trust me, it'll help. And like, acknowledging the headache and like whereabouts in the head does it hurt and what does it feel like makes the headache go away sometimes. I don't know why that came to mind, but it kind of reminds me of that. If you actually pay attention to the thing you're trying to avoid, it's the thing that helps you move past it.
Yeah. The only way out is through. It's so true. Like in my personal experience, you know, I've been to therapy for a 5-year period. I told you a little bit about that. You know, the big challenge for me was being able to put the emotions to words and building that skill and being able to be candid and honest. And, you know, part of it is having a person that you can trust to talk about these things with. I think that's huge. You can't share these things with everybody, but, you know, building that muscle where it's like, I feel a thing. I understand where it comes from. I can rationalize it and say it is, it's important to give yourself more credit than you might have in the moment, just because of how much work it takes to do that very thing.
Yeah. I also, just so everyone's aware, I think I've spoken about this a lot, about my burnout at work, but basically what happened was I was on this very important, massive transformation project as the performance sort of test lead. And although I wasn't responsible for doing all the performance testing, there were like 10 other teams who had to do it. And it was a massive waterfall program, lots of parallel stuff happening. And I just didn't have the agency or autonomy in my cognitive. My mind was blown by the context I had to keep in on board. And then it also was coupled with the fact that it was just a checkbox. No one cared about the performance. It was just, but I had to be done, you know? And I just, one day, I just stopped being out of sleep. That's what happened. And I didn't even realize it was happening. I knew I was unhappy at work. I didn't realize how bad it was, though. Although I remember about 2 months before I stopped being out of sleep, I had this weird thing in my vision and I went to an optometrist and they checked my eyes and I had this bubble in my retina. And they said, if you don't, this is stress related. If you don't deal with this, you could have permanent vision damage. And that was a wake up, but I still didn't cotton on to the fact that how bad it was getting. And then when the sleep stopped, you know, when I stopped being out of sleep, I would just be heart just pounding all the time. I'm just trying to sleep and I just couldn't get to sleep. Or I'd go to sleep and wake up. It got the critical point for me was when I remember being awake. I hadn't slept for 3 days, basically, maybe 2 hours each day. And I was awake at midnight. The rest of the family was asleep in their beds. And I was just crying on the couch. I just didn't know what to do. How do I get out of this place? I called our health line, you know, for advice. And, you know, that was the journey. And then the next step was to go and see my GP, get some medication, you know, talk about counseling, those kinds of things. And just slowly took me a good year to get back to like a semblance of myself again.
Yeah. That's real. Mm. That's real. My goodness. Again, definitely appreciate you being so candid about the experience. People cry, folks. Let's normalize that. We all do it, right?
Yeah.
I think that's like the first thing we all have to admit. Crying is totally allowed in the human experience, folks. No, right on. And so obviously burnout, let's transition to that.
Yeah.
Because that's a big gigantic theme for many of us in tech, especially those that are on call or like you have a very large project, you have a lack of agency and the ability to affect your own outcomes. Like, how else do you think, you know, burnout manifested in your life? Not just like lack of sleep. And suffering through it is a big one. Do you think there are other things that you were dealing with as well in life that people might relate to?
I think definitely lots of physical and sort of mental things that happen I can talk to, but also maybe some changes in behavior as well and how it affected other people. So in terms of what I was going through, so yes, being unable to sleep, just constantly heart pounding all the time. I used to get songs stuck in my head for 3 or 4 days at a time, just the most stupidest songs that I didn't even like. And it's just drove you freaking crazy.
Oh, wow.
Twitching eye. You know, obviously the retina thing.
Yeah.
What else? A ringing in your ears, like a constantly.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were the main ones. And then obviously just that with the adrenaline, you just you can't speak properly. You're kind of shaky and weird. And that was the sort of physical stuff. I also think that when I'm getting towards that burnout phase, I have a more reckless behavior. And I think I'll drink a lot more. That's one thing. And I want to go out and socialize and party. And you know, I just want to get out, you know, let out some sort of, you know, express in some way. And I think it's not always the most positive way to express oneself is to get faced.
No, of course not. but it's so relatable. There's so many things that you're describing that I can relate to. The twitching eye thing, I didn't even think about. And I remember, you know, back in my corporate days when I was living a very different life, having that experience and, you know, not thinking about it, but you speaking about it, I'm like, whoa, there's a parallel here. But I mean, I have seen people in, you know, the industry that have worked with me try to self-soothe or cope with stressors in ways that are like they help them cope in the moment, but they're maladaptive. So the long-term, you know, effects of those choices are not positive and are not helpful to the relationships, not helpful to their bodies. You know, alcohol is definitely a common one. You know, I think in our industry, you know, people, we will joke like, oh yeah, this incident or this job drove us to drinking. And it's crazy how it's like a subject of humor, but I feel that behind the scenes is the grim reality of how tough our work can be. And everything. What you said is definitely relatable. Yeah. You got anything else to add on this one? There's a lot going on here.
Yeah. Just, you know, it might be interesting to people to know. So I actually went on a medication for 6 months, which is the only time I've been on sort of medication like this in my life. It was, sertraline. It's an antidepressant / anti anxiety medication.
Yeah.
And it was a strange experience, I think. I actually don't think, for me personally, it helped. I don't think it reduced my anxiety at all. It just made me feel really sort of robotic for 6 months.
Mm.
You know, maybe I was just a bit sort of lost my mojo. I felt less creative. A little bit less maybe aggressive. I felt a bit more sort of placid. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it was good for the family to hear me sort of like that. But the one thing I would say is if you do go on that, be careful how you come off it, because I came off too quickly and it was just bizarre. I remember just walking down the street and this the sensation that your consciousness just would go leave your head, boom, at the back of your head, and boom, come back into your body. Ooh. And it was just so disorientating because I tapered down way too hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have some friends. I've never been on medication throughout my emotional health journey. I have friends and loved ones that have, you know, some people do well, you know, with SSRIs or, you know, medical interventions. Some folks don't. It's an individual journey, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have heard tales like yours where, you know, you try something and there's side effects or there's, you know, experiences that are a little goofy. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to say, just because it didn't have a huge effect on me in terms of like reducing my anxiety, it was the other things I did which helped, I think, more. Mm-hmm. I have known people where it had a profound effect and just made them feel so much better. So I don't want to take away from medication. It's a fantastic tool if it works for you, right? Just find the medication that works for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of counseling and sort of therapy, and you found that helps you?
Huh. You can't help but not interview me. That's so funny. We're going to go with it. We'll go with it. This is a partnership this episode because we both have
It fits in because I've just started my counseling journey, so we can talk about it.
Very good. I love this. This is awesome. All right, then. Yes, I went to therapy for 5 years. Initially, it was like, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks. But there was a period back in 2021 where I went 4 days a week.
Wow.
And it was the most intense thing that I ever did on an emotional level because I was doing analysis. Now, psychoanalysis isn't something that's common, but I found a badass therapist that I worked with over this period that did it. And, you know, she basically gave me no quarter. Like anything that I revealed as part of the process of doing analysis, which is very specific and systematic, like it's a mirror, and you're seeing aspects of yourself every day, the positive and the negative. It really is a vehicle for self-recognition and understanding the good bits of yourself as well as the challenging bits of yourself and being real about those things. If it wasn't for going to therapy, I would not have the tools to name my emotions, to properly cope with them, to understand myself, to understand what I want, right? That's a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like a lot of people in tech are people pleasers. I was the king of the people pleasers. I was the hero complex. You know, like a lot of us that are on call, we love jumping in the fire and proving to people that we're awesome. But, you know, behind that is a massive wound. And, you know, going to therapy revealed that and made it so that way, instead of me trying to prove to others that I'm worthwhile, I know that within myself now. And that shifted behavior in terms of how I work. It changed my relationships, and the relationships that I choose to be in and the company that I keep. It was a transformative experience for me, but it is other side. It is a very serious commitment. Like if you're going to go into therapy and you're willing to show up, do the work, even if it's uncomfortable, you're going to get more out of it than if you're just showing up and, you know, just doing little. Like you really have to be willing to face the difficult part. Right.
I think, so I've just started. I've had two sessions with a counselor.
Yeah.
I don't think it will be as intense as what you're talking about, but the goal is the same. We've already talked about it. Ultimately, she thinks that a lot of the reason for my anxiety is that I don't actually accept myself. And so it's about identifying trauma in a way and not sort of working through that. I don't even know what to expect yet. It's still early days and she's sort of easing me into it, right? But it's been pretty interesting so far. And if nothing else, I'm getting some almost like I've been calling them mantras. She doesn't call them that. I do. Some things that have sort of helped me. And one of them is that there was a study done that shows that human beings always do the best that they can, given their constraints, right?
Yes.
I think that's amazing. So just to think back and go, whatever's happened in life, like everyone has these regrets, like, oh, I wish I'd done this, or I'm not good enough here, I failed there. You did the best that you could, given the constraints at the time, you know?
That's right.
And so you just have to accept that. And I did the best that I could, you know? It's okay, right? Another one she keeps talking about is you are always good enough. You're not perfect. You were always good enough. And that's, I'm still learning to actually let that one sink in, but it's a big one.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Self-compassion, man. That's like, that's big stuff.
Easier said than done, right? But it's just, we're so hard on ourselves. So many people are, you know, it's unnecessary pain, you know?
No, 100%. You brought up something that I'm just going to fast forward through the questions now. Because you brought it up naturally. So I think you and I have been dancing around this subject, but let's jump right in. We're talking about perfectionism now, where we as professionals, a good number of us, we place impossibly high standards on ourselves. You know, we're like the first ones in the office, we're the last ones out, right? And we do not tolerate a failure, you know, to the point where if we examined our behavior towards ourselves as if we were doing it on someone else, we would be thinking we were terrible, abusive people.
Yeah.
You know? So do you identify with like, it sounds like you identify some with perfectionism and like, you know, like struggling with that and holding too high of a bar for you as a human being 100%. In the world, right? Yeah.
The thing is, if I was to do all of the work that I do to the level that I want it to be at, I would be investing weeks into the smallest thing. And it's just impossible and not sustainable.
Yeah.
And it is very difficult for me to do even what is a pretty good job. And I just feel so unsatisfying. I'm like, I could do it better. It's not, you know, and it's really hard to let that go. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you resonate with that at all?
I definitely did in the past. I consider myself a recovering perfectionist. You know, there was a period in time where I would be very hard on myself if I made any mistakes, and it would be mistakes at work, or it'd be mistakes relationally, or it'd be anything. Mm. Like I did not allow myself, you know, any ability to fail. But the funny thing about that is, you know, I'm treating myself like crap while at the same time going to blameless postmortem meetings and saying, technology and process, not people. Isn't that messed up? It's like our very discipline as DevOps and SRE professionals has part of the solution. And we are preaching that solution every day in meetings. And yet we cannot internalize it ourselves.
I had never thought of that before, but it's 100% correct. I had a blameless postmortem session yesterday and I'm saying the things that you're talking about.
That's what I'm saying.
And yet later that day with my own work and my own head, I'm blaming.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Process and technology, not people. You know, Ben Trainer Schloss from SRE, the original SRE practices. And we're saying it, we're preaching it, we're implementing it for our teams. Do not implement it for ourselves. Like, let's pledge to ourselves that we will try, you know, to not put so much a crap on us, you know, when we make mistakes. We're humans, we are fallible. And it is through the failure that we learn in the freaking first place.
I know. Yeah. Can I, there's something else, and I'm not sure if it's unique to me. I don't think it is, which has become a new sort of anxiety and stress and worry in my life. Mm-hmm. It's now that I've become a people leader in particular. I'm a very empathetic person. Yeah. And I know I've heard all the training about this before. I know that you can't give too much of yourself and put yourself in everyone else's shoes all the time. It's like compassion versus empathy or whatever you want to. There's different phrases for it.
Yes.
I find it extremely difficult. Honestly, you know, there's another thing my counselor said is that when you are interacting with someone, so sometimes I've got to give really tough feedback, or I've got to call out something which has been happening, or discuss something which is actually quite personal, but it's getting in the way of the work. And, And sometimes the responses to that are violently, like, not violent, but just like, ah, you know, like you get this thing coming back at you. I'd taken that so personally for so long. And my counselor said to me, the thing is, you have a job, you give the feedback, whatever comes back at you, it has nothing to do with you. It's nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It's just that person and what they're going through and their experience. It's fine. Just let it be. All you can do is just, and I find it so hard to keep that distance, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Can you relate to that?
100%. I mean, I was in management for a long time prior to becoming a consultant. And, you know, or in my early game, when I was, you know, getting the ropes of being a manager, there were times where I had to do the crucial conversations or provide that feedback or even, you know, do all of the personnel leadership stuff leading to termination. I had to do some of that. And you want your team to like you, you know, you want your team to like you, man. And that unfortunately is a problem. Because it holds you back from the thing that you need to do. You are responsible for the technical output of your entire team. And I have seen, if you are a manager that isn't willing to come forward with the reality and the facts around how a person's behavior affects the overall team suffers. So the way that I've, you know, framed these things now and coach others is that, you know, what you're doing is for the team. And indeed, like your therapist said, rightfully so, you are not responsible for another person's emotional state. Yep. If they respond or react to the feedback that you're giving with aggression or whatever, that's their deal. But it is your task to hold the line on what the standard is in terms of what acceptable behavior and work output is for your team. You have to do this. You are a manager. That is your job. So having those difficult conversations is important. But I will say, like, there is this skill called containment, emotional containment. You do it in relationships. You do it with your kids. You do it with your employees, your reports. What I mean by that is you are handling the messiness of the emotions that are in the room, or you are comforting, or you're listening with a comforting ear to someone that's having a tough time. You know, you are allowing yourself to create the space that is safe for a person to be themselves and express it in it, even if it is messy, painful, sad, worried, whatever those emotions are that are difficult. That is a skill that leaders have to have if you're going to be able to provide a peace to a situation that is volatile.
Mm-hmm.
And that is emotional labor that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also worth acknowledging, we recently did some feedback work as the leadership team at Blue Current, and I got paired with the chief executive for people and HR. I forgot the title. Yeah. And so she's really, really, really good at this stuff. And I was like, I was talking through a situation and she was explaining what she would do. And I'd be like, I would never come up with that in the moment. But she said to me, but like fundamentally, your full-time job isn't this stuff, right? So you're not going to be perfect.
Right.
You know? But it's just doing the best that you can. And so there's different techniques. You know, one of the things I freeze a lot. So I need to train myself to say, I'm hearing what you're saying. I need a little bit of time to process this. Can I come back to you later today? You know, give yourself the time to come down from that fight, flight, or freeze, process it, and then come back with something rational that's going to actually help the situation.
Oh yeah. So real. Right? What's happening is that your amygdala is firing.
Yeah.
Your fight or flight response is firing. And, you know, when you are in situations where that is invoked and you don't have a bear chasing you like in the last episode, you know, we have to pause. We have to pause. Because in that moment, our prefrontal cortex is not activated. It's off.
Yeah.
We cannot reason. So I think that advice is totally spot on and backed by medical science. And I think it's reasonable to say, hey, let me return to this conversation a bit. Or even just be like, hey, give me a minute. Take some deep breaths, you know, and then be able to resume. I know what that is like. I've been through the fire and flames of having to deal with conversations with difficult people and having to, you know, respond or handle my own emotional responses to very volatile you know, behavior and volume and tone and all the stuff that can get you your, you know, the hairs in the back of your neck standing up. Like, yeah. It's a real skill. It's a real skill. And being a leader requires you to pick up these emotional skills. Like, soft skills, quote unquote, aren't like soft or less than the technical skills. I think in this context, it's really important. It's massively important.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to program in Golang, right? But I imagine it's much, much easier for me to go and learn Golang than to work on this stuff, which is personal. It's unpredictable, and it's about self-discipline and understanding and so many things, you know? But yeah. I also wanted to say, there's the other side of things. If you have like staff who are like, oh, you're amazing, you're the best boss ever, da, 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 that's also nothing to do with you. It's actually...
Correct.
Them and how they're feeling, and you can't get all caught up in that, because then you'll get addicted to that, you know, that feedback. I need to be loved. I need to get this feedback. And then if you don't get it, you're going to be like, oh, where's my praise? You know, it's not about
that. That's right. That's right. Yeah. You're talking a little bit about psychological projection, right? Like, people are feeling, they're looking at you and they're projecting a picture of what they're thinking about on you. And they're not looking at you, Stephen. They're looking at you, really friendly uncle that they haven't seen in a while, but they had great memories of, like, you know, that type of stuff. No, it's true. It's true. Mm. We are very messy human beings, as buttoned up as we are, and we wear suits to work. Underneath, in our brains and our psyche, there's all kinds of things going on that we don't want to admit. And bringing it to the surface and making it conscious is what gives us the freedom to from just acting out. So I have some. This is awesome, by the way. I love our meandering. But like, as a leader, I think this is a really important question for you. So as a leader, what other skills or things have you learned, or what behaviors have you had to shift, understanding, you know, the things within yourself and then how you act as a leader, so that way those things are not affecting your team?
Mm.
How do you show up for your reports, you know, with this increasing self-knowledge?
Okay. I think what comes to mind, one of the things is actually understanding each person in your team and the unique way, their unique qualities and the way that they like to be communicated to, and the way they like you to work with them, and being able to adapt to that. You can't treat everyone the same. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. I think also transitioning from a hands-on engineer to a leader, and this is something I'm actually not very good at yet, is to shift from I do to I coach. It's hard, especially if there's a thing that you know a lot about and you're very good at, and you're like, I need to coach this person to do this thing, and I'm not going to do it myself. You know, it's obviously very much faster for you to just do it yourself in that moment, but lost opportunity for someone else to learn, lost opportunity to scale out that knowledge across into other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coaching's, I've only really succeeded in coaching with specific feedback or like, I need to coach this person through a particular behavior. I've done that a few times, and I prepare a lot for those moments. But in terms of the work in coaching, I'm not very good at it yet.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's what else? It's really about consistency. I think often there's things in my head and I just assume everyone knows what's going on. It could be about the work. It could be about the direction of the team. It could be about our culture. It could be about what's happening in other parts of the org. I feel like I'm not necessarily the best at keeping people informed. So just remembering to keep reiterating things. It might feel like you're repeating yourself, but you're not. Someone might have been away sick and they didn't hear. You know, but that's a different change that I've made.
Mm.
But the biggest journey for me, like I said, is be with the team, show up for them, keep grounded. Don't get too invested in all what's going on between different people on the team, because the less emotional we are about it, I think the better that we can respond to those situations and the better that we can act. It's more compassionate to be unemotional, to see what's happening and go, here is a situation. What's the best thing that we can do to shift that? Or where can we go from here? But if you're caught up in all that, then like you said, the amygdala is going and your prefrontal cortex isn't able to process that and problem solve. And that's the hardest thing for me at the moment.
Oh, for sure. I remember learning something called the objective third, as in the objective third person perspective, where you are seeing a situation play out. And you're not emotionally involved in the situation, but you are being curious. And what you were describing just now was a perspective of curiosity. Wow, this person is speaking loud and very fast and breathing very heavy. And their eyes, you can see the, you can see all of their pupils. What's going on here? What is being said, right? What do we need to do to calm the thing down? How can we resolve this short term and fix it long term, right? Like, being objective, even in the situations that are emotionally volatile, I think is a big skill, you know, as a manager, because, and I, this is the next question. So you have dealt with these high amplitude moments. You've dealt with team members that are, they have disagreements, conflicts. That's common to all of us, right? So how do you think you are able to create psychological safety or chill out a situation where that is conflict driven with these tools? Like, I think in our last conversation, you were discussing some experiences with this.
Okay. There's, I feel like there's two questions. There's how do you create psychological safety? And I think there's that question. And then how do you calm a situation down?
Yes. I think they're intertwined, but yeah, take one or the other.
Yeah, because there's kind of like the long term that you do, the things that you do to slowly build that psychological safety. And then there's the how do you deal with those moments?
Right.
I'd say I'm better at the former than the latter.
Yeah.
So psychological safety and building that. So what have I been trying? I'm not an expert, right? I'm 2.5 years into my people leadership journey, and I'm still learning. Absolutely, 100%. But one of the things that I personally do is I show vulnerability. Right from day one, I think I told the whole team about how I burned out like 6 years ago and said, like, this is one of the motivations of why I became a leader. And this is like, and this is why I kind of drive for this kind of culture and describe what I like to build. So showing that vulnerability continually, and that can be also part of being vulnerable is giving feedback, because it's a scary thing to give other people feedback. But when you start doing it, then other people get permission as well to give you feedback and give each other feedback. So that's part of that. I also make sure that there are forums where we are together as a team, or say in the case of blameless postmortems, not my team, but wider groups.
Yes.
We're making forums that people can just speak openly and reflect and talk about how things are going.
Yeah.
So we have although we're not really a project team, we do have a 3-week sprint cycle. It's not really a sprint. It's more like Kanban in 3-week increments, but with a bit of project work in there. But we have a retrospective every 3 weeks, and it's amazing. You know, we sit down, we talk about everything, what's going well as a team with the work and everything else, and what are the risks, what are we worried about, you know, what do we wonder about, how can we do this, and that kind of thing, creating the space for those things. And something that I have done quite well in the past but haven't in this new role yet is making sure that there's time, we spend time together as a team purely to get to know each other better, to be connected and not always be about the work.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a workshop next week called Moving Motivators. Have you heard about that one?
No, tell me more.
It's basically there's 10 motivators, and each person, they're things that motivate you in your work and your life, right? It could be things like I need agency, or I need, you know, I need power and autonomy, or like I need, security, whatever it is, right? There's different categories. I can't remember what they all are.
Yeah.
And you couldn't order them at this moment in time, what's most important, what's least important. And then you talk about it as a group, because you get to understand, oh, this person actually, what's most important and what motivates them is this. And that's totally different to me. That's interesting. So it's just a small thing. I also want to then work on communication styles as well, that kind of thing. So taking time as a team to understand each other, to get to know each other as well, I think that helps build it. And I think the last thing is, if there's anything which is breaking that psychological safety, you've got to call it out in the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a careful balance, because sometimes if there's like conflict, this is a new thing for me, let it play out. Don't jump in and be the dad or the parent and say, blah, blah, blah. Like, just let stuff play out a little bit, because everyone's adults and they can figure stuff out for themselves, right? But if there's particular things that are said and it's just inappropriate, or someone is shooting someone else down in a moment of vulnerability, that's, you've got to get onto that quickly to make sure that you're not just saying a thing, you're backing it up and enforcing it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah, conflict is healthy. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with the healthy debate about approach, about, you know, how to solve a problem. It's just like there's some rules you follow. You don't personally insult the other person. You don't raise your voice. You don't become threatening. You don't do those things. Those are non-negotiables in any setting, much less workplace. But
conflict is actually healthy. Like, you need conflict.
Yeah.
About 100%. The work, but you've got to build that trust before the conflict emerges. Yeah. And before that, you might get a situation where there's a discomfort because people are not saying the thing that they really want to say. That's really important to them, that would really help the work.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Like in martial arts, you learn by sparring, but you never hit below the belt. You know what I mean? Like there's a format, but you're still able to do the thing and learn from experience. No, this is awesome stuff. And I'm glad that, you know, in your experience as leader for the past, you know, two or so years, like, you're thinking about this stuff, because there's a lot of managers that don't, and, you know, the results are catastrophic in terms of, you know, the outcomes on teams and others and everything else.
Yeah, there is a price, though, not a price. Like, I have definitely invested a lot in leadership and understanding in that area.
Yeah.
And in terms of technology, I am completely hands off now, which I probably, you know, there's pros and cons to it, right? I think it depends what kind of leader you want to be, where you want to take your career. I'm involved in the technology more on a strategic perspective, like, how do we do this? What's our approach here? But I'm not actually on the tools at the moment.
Yes.
Although I was planning to do some stuff today.
Well, I'm going to give you an opinion about this. I think that's fine. There's a bunch of tech CEOs out there in the age of AI that are like, no, we need player coaches. But what they're failing to realize is that leadership, like management, is its own career track, is its own skill set. And getting humans to be able to work together in concert to solve a larger problem is a skill, right? And you can't, just because, you know, we have agentic doesn't mean that you can do management and engineering. Like, I tried to straddle that line for a long time. And I think to the point about burnout, it burnt me out because I was doing two jobs at once. So I want to celebrate saying, yeah, if you're a people leader, that's a job. That's a valid thing to do in an organization. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to be technical. Sure. Like, have a finger, you know, in a pot somewhere, so that way you know the reality of what your team is doing, but you don't need to be like shipping diffs every day or something.
You know? And that's what I'm feeling right now with agentic and AI, is that with other things we're doing, like observability, you know, Kubernetes or whatever, I touched that in my past, so I understand enough to like to have a you know, to understand what the team's working on. But actually, this agentic stuff, I've never actually been hands on, so I want to get hands on enough that I can understand. Right, this is how it can work, and yeah, be better for the team.
Exactly. No, this is really cool, and I for listeners, I hope you've gotten some interesting ideas if you're a manager, like, perspectives that will help you, you know, manage conflict and deal with all of the stuff dealing with humans, because it's messy. So let's take this plane in for a landing. I have one, you know, subject that we can talk about before we wrap. So let's talk about work culture, Western work culture, for a bit. You know, when we are outside of work, there's like this implicit expectation that the things that we do outside of work is productive in some way.
Yeah.
So we can't, it's like we don't even have the freedom to just do the thing for its own sake. So what's your relationship with rest, Stephen? And like, how has that changed over time? Has it gotten better?
That's
has it
right.
gotten worse?
We right? talked about this, didn't we? A week or two ago. Uh-huh. So this is the most recent. I didn't burn out, but I did get a little bit of insomnia, and this was a new experience to me. It wasn't about work. It was about what you're describing now. So I don't know. I feel guilty about spending relaxing time by myself, which isn't productive. So I produce two podcasts, right?
Yeah, you do.
Which is a huge thing by itself, and it takes a lot of time. Not only that, I like put pressure on myself, like, to post stuff online about what I'm thinking about work, my challenges. I also create music, you know, I'm constantly doing stuff which is productive, and then not giving myself the time to play a video game, just chill out and watch a TV series. And when I am doing those things, which, sure, I'm not productive, but then they recharge my battery, and acknowledging that. And that's tough, man. I don't quite haven't quite figured a way to not feel guilty by saying, you know what, actually, after dinner tonight, I'm going to spend 3 hours and I just don't want to be disturbed. I'm just going to do my own thing. And it's there's no output, yes. No outcome.
yes.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I think we all as an industry need to get off the treadmill, you know, and for us to build in that confidence that rest is a good thing. Idleness is a good thing. Laziness is a good thing. Being bored is a good thing.
100%. That's when the creative stuff happens, right? And it's also at work. I think we are obsessed at the moment with 100% productive, which is like, you know, we know from like understanding systems that is terribly inefficient when there's so much more slack time. And if you get enough slack time when you're doing the thing and you've got time in between and you've got time to think and get bored and you're like, man, we could do this better. Or, oh, wow, we could do this new thing and whatever it is, you know, we need so much more than we're getting at the moment.
Right. Utilization divided by idle. Isn't that a performance engineering equation?
Yeah. It's like if you see CPU consumption and then, you know, depending on how many cores you've got and so on, like the more you get above 50%, you know, and you just see the queuing that begins to occur because of that. It's exponential the higher you go, right?
There it is. Yeah. And we only have one core. Like anybody that says they are multitasking is lying to you. There's no multitasking in humans. We are single processor. We have to context switch, and we don't context switch in milliseconds. We context switch in minutes.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. In fact, I've heard some, it takes like 15 minutes to switch between two things really that you're working on. And when I see the number of meetings people attend and the 17 tasks they've got for the day, that's just... it's not sustainable. It's not fun. And the job that you'll do for each of those things is going to be degraded, the quality.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, to wrap, do you have any additional, like you're not a therapist, obviously, but you're going on a journey. You're learning things. Is there any like advice or seeds to plant that you want our listeners to hear from you?
I think it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Right. To be in moments with like, what is going on? I'm so miserable. I'm so stressed out, or I can't sleep. Just first of all, acknowledge that and just pay attention to yourself. I think it's really helped me to read books and to talk to people to get different paradigms, different, you know, those mantras I talked about. Another one was from this book, Happy by Darren Brown. And it talks about, you know, things we all know, like the circle of control and influence and that. But just to wake up every morning and acknowledge the only thing I can actually control is what I do and how I think. And all those other things, the outcomes that I want to try and achieve, they're actually not in my control. And I think things like that, like different paradigms, like mindsets, frameworks can really help. But you've got to be disciplined about like not just reading it once and moving on, but just pick the things that you find helpful and remind yourself continually and work on those things and be in those moments and go, oh, actually, I'm really worked up about this thing. It doesn't actually matter. Do some box breathing. Gain techniques. Get information. If you have access to a therapist or a counselor, like if you have an EAP service at your work, use it. Like I had this thought of, oh, you know, but maybe I'm not. It's you know, there are people that need it more than me. Screw that, man. Just go and talk to someone. You've got nothing to lose. You've learned something more about yourself at the very least, or you'll discover you don't like it, and you still discovered something. Great. I don't know. I'm not a therapist or a mental health expert. This is just stuff that's helped me. Keep learning and be aware that there's probably so many paradigms and way that you can perceive the world that you're not aware of yet. Just go out and find them and they'll help you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate all of this guidance. I think there's a lot of nuggets of truth in there. So how should people reach you? If they're just interested in chatting you up on LinkedIn, maybe, or maybe be a guest on your illustrious podcast, how should they reach you?
Yep. So I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn, Stephen Townsend. I'm sure there'll be a link in the description to this. I'm also on Instagram if you want to follow me there. That's probably the easiest way to find me. And yeah, I'm always looking for guests on the podcast. And particularly if you want to talk about this kind of stuff, fantastic. Or if you want to talk about more SRE tech leadership topics, I'd love to talk about like real experiences that people had and rather than the theory and the concepts. And my only thing is I don't want to talk about AI on my podcast. Not this year, because there's so many other people talking about it. I want to talk about human beings. Yeah.
Fantastic. Wow. Stephen, a pleasure, man. I really appreciate the opportunity to interview you and to talk about such an important topic. This has been awesome. Super grateful for your time.
Thank you so much, Amin, for giving, you know, give me a chance to talk about, you know, the stuff that's just so personal to me. And I know I've spoken about it by myself on my podcast, but it really, it means a lot to be able to share this part of me and for people to get to know a bit more about it. And like, it's not just about me. It's helpful for me to express this and talk about it, but I'm just hoping that if there's even one person out there who might be going through some stuff and didn't really have the tools or and it gives them some nugget to go away and help themselves, then fantastic.
Beautiful sentiment. All right, man. Until next time.
Thanks, Amin.
Thank you for listening to today's edition of Reliability Rebels. Until next time.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check, 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 check.